Churches once built schools and hospitals and were active partners helping shape the common life of their communities. But in many sectors, the church has withdrawn from that role, and as attendance declines and buildings are used less and less, even before the pandemic, the question has become more pressing. How will the church emerge again as a vital part of our common life? Or even, can it? I'm Rosalie Harden, Executive Producer of Faith and Finance. Welcome to our show. In this season, we're presenting our Neighborhood Economics, Healing Our Communities, a virtual event which was held in November of 2020. Economies of interdependence are emerging all around us, and Neighborhood Economics brought together entrepreneurs and changemakers, developers and storytellers, pastors and impact investors to share where their communities are finding hope and a way forward. This episode is excerpted from the session, Why the Church Should Care About Entrepreneurship, which was part of the entrepreneurship track of Neighborhood Economics. The session was moderated by John Brothers, president of the T. Rowe Price Foundation, which focuses on philanthropy and social change in Baltimore, Maryland. He was joined in conversation by Carrie Sims, who runs Created Space, where she helps pastors and churches on the edge of a pivot, Mark Sampson, the co-founder and lead learner at Rooted Good, an organization which helps design, develop, and launch ideas, and Mark DeMaz, founding pastor of the Mosaic Church of Central Arkansas, a multi-ethnic and economically diverse church. Mark is also the author of The Coming Revolution in Church Economics. The full session of Why the Church Should Care About Entrepreneurship is available for purchase, along with the rest of Neighborhood Economics, at community.faithfinance.net. I hope you enjoy their conversation.
My name is John Brothers, and I live in Baltimore, Maryland. I lead a global philanthropy, corporate philanthropy through a company called T. Rowe Price, and do a lot of work in place-based work in cities, mainly in Baltimore. And a lot of our work is very collaborative. We've done a lot of work around entrepreneurship, social entrepreneurship, micro business development, and all of those areas. And some of that, much of that work has been in disinvested communities. And a lot of that work, some of that work, I should say, has been intertwined in kind of multi-sector partnerships, often with the faith community. We've had some successes, but we've also had a number of challenges. And so I think it's I'm really excited about this panel. And so, Carrie, we'll come back to you and the good work you're doing in Fredericksburg and beyond. Can you talk a little bit about why the church should care and embrace entrepreneurship from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think now more than ever, we need creative problem solvers that are willing to take a risk. And I mean, this was, you know, even before we're in the pandemic, just helping the work I've been doing. And that is, I just see the desire for people to find a way forward that's sustainable. Everyone's worried about money. Everyone's worried about budgets. But if we could find creative solutions, so I think a lot of it has to do with becoming creative problem solvers, which takes risk, which calls us to enact faith, and to just really. To just live, step into an adventure with God, which, you know, we would think that we all are as church leaders and even people, lay leaders, just people in the church, just, you know, we proclaim this faith. But I think one of the things we really need to focus on is just helping people actually enact the faith and seek their creativity to really. To not just think about how the world's solving problems, but use their own creativity to think about how the church might actually solve societal problems.
Yep.
And bring about sustainable enterprise.
So, Carrie, I'm going to stick with you just real quickly as a piggyback to that. So when you use, you know, what I really love about what you said is entrepreneurship as a problem solver, which I would assume in your world, sometimes folks, when entrepreneurship is used as a problem solver, it's brand new for them, right? For some of them might go to it like a duck to water. Can you talk a little bit about how you have helped folks who are new to entrepreneurship as a problem-solving mechanism get over the hump on that?
Yeah. I think a lot of it happens just in helping people relate to their own sort of their identity, their own God-given calling. Something, because they're going to make moves on the things that they're passionate about,
right,
and the things, the problems that might want to solve. And so just helping people connect to kind of to reconnect maybe sometimes how God made them, like how God might want to creatively move through them. I think, let's see, what else would I say about that?
And I threw an odd one out at you, so my apologies.
No, but it does have to do with creativity for me. And so I feel like leaders right now are just responding. They're reacting. They're having to react, and they're having to just make decisions maybe they're not ready to make, or say yes to things or no to things that they isn't fully fleshed out. And I mean, that is partially the time we're in. But to the degree that we're able to consecrate some separate space for real discernment and real interaction with God, I just encourage people to get alone and I can walk them through that, but just to kind of get out of the just the slew of to do and to just really commune with the Lord, which sounds over spiritual, so I'm not trying to be over spiritual, but I think that creative problem solving comes from our own creativity that comes from God.
Yep, that's awesome. Mark Sampson, can you, the back to the root question, why should the church care and embrace entrepreneurship from your perspective?
Yeah, it's a good question. I feel like the question is an interesting one as well, because it's an interesting question. And you could ask the alternative question is, why hasn't the church perhaps in the past cared about entrepreneurship? Greg Jones, he's the dean of Divinity School, he talks about an interaction he had with a scholar called Greg Dease, who was one of the first key scholars in the academic field of social entrepreneurship, wrote this seminal paper in the 90s. Greg Dease said to Greg Jones, too many Gregs, too many Marks, he said, where did the church go? And he actually made the case that Greg Dease isn't a person of faith, but he said from an academic perspective, the church used to always be involved in innovation in society. Where did it go? And his argument was that actually the current field of social entrepreneurship emerged precisely because of the abdication of the church in its role in society, which is fascinating. So even the question, why we have this question now, is intriguing. And I think it's really helpful to actually step back and think about a kind of, you know, the 30,000 foot view, what's going on in society right now, to mean that even this conversation of faith and finance, why it's such an important one. And I think in many ways we're experiencing a disintegration or a kind of reintegration at the same time of various aspects of sort of modern sort of Western society. And sort of historically, our societies were constructed on very neat separate categories. So we had the sort of public or the government space, we had the business and the market space, and we had the sort of civil and sort of social charitable space. And never shall they meet, right? Different legal structures, different purposes in society. You know, Milton Friedman classically said, you know, the business of business is business. It just exists to make profits. Governments, you know, they're to do with sort of justice and policy. And then over here, we've got the charitable sector, which kind of cleans up everyone else's messes, but very separate. And what we've seen in the last 30 years, but particularly accelerated at moments of cultural change and crisis, is the dissolution of those boundaries in very dramatic ways. And it's reconfiguring everything around us. So, for example, in recent conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan, there were more members of private companies than of national sort of militaries involved in that conflict. And that's because of the disintegration between government and business.
Gosh.
Right? The entire field of sort of social enterprise and social entrepreneurship is really the dissolution of the boundary between business and nonprofit or charity. And so one of the reasons that we should care about entrepreneurship is that we're just part of a cultural moment where we have to. Like, it's all of the ways of thinking, the structures, the categories that we used to have no longer fit, they no longer work, right? And you see this super practically with lots of people wrestling with their legal structures right now. Can I do this? I'm a 501c3. Should I care about this? I'm an LLC. Can, you know, we're publicly traded. Should we? Because they don't fit. They don't work. You know, we have this, you know, that, you know, and it's really interesting because this moment, I think, is sort of pregnant with an immense amount of promise, but also some peril as well. Because I suggest that the moral nature of private contractors fighting wars, that's a moral question. It's not a pragmatic one. The question of church and entrepreneurship is a moral and a theological question, right? So we've got a new landscape, and I think we need new language.
Yeah, that's really good. You know, one of the things that when I had a social enterprise for 15 years, a consulting business, and we used to do this activity that we ultimately sold to the London School of Economics that was around how you collaborate and partner. And what we learned from that is that people create rules, even though there doesn't need to be rules, about collaborating, about how they should do it. And they just start to operate in these modes. And oftentimes what we would see is faith communities were often the most challenged in trying to think outside of the box about what they could or couldn't do. Mm-hmm. And so I think both you and Carrie touched on this a little bit, is some of the ideas that we're seeing a blending between business, social good, nonprofits, a number of these areas. And so for folks that want to practice that, they've got to try to figure out different ways to move and to operate, which is what I think I'm gleaning from you, Mark, and a little bit from Carrie. Smack me if I'm wrong on that.
That sounds good. Yeah.
Good. There we go. So Mark D, can you also kind of give me your perspective on kind of why should the church care and embrace entrepreneurship?
As we talk about in that book, there's at once a sociological and theological reason, let alone the practical good, the community engagement and transformation. But from a sociological perspective, there's a growing burden on the middle class. The American church has relied on the middle class essentially to build it in terms of both its economy, as well as in terms of volunteer investment of discretionary time. There's a growing burden on the middle class. Middle class wealth today is the lowest it's been since 1941. Wealth gaps between upper middle income, lower income people, all of that has been widening over the past five decades. So as people, and particularly the middle class, struggle to get ahead, churches are struggling right along with them. There's the rise of dual income. Nearly 7%, 5% of households today have at least two or more income streams. And so as goes the people's household, so goes the church. The tithe, if you will, tithes and offerings, is like one income stream in a house. It's not sustainable long-term. That reason, a marginal increase in religious giving, generational shifts and approaches and attitudes towards giving, right? Nearly 80% of money given to the American church today comes from people born before 1964. It's not just that younger people don't have money. It's they have an entirely different attitude when it comes to money. In fact, Barna talks about this in terms of their understanding of giving, of income. They see equated with giving in terms of money is also product endorsement and volunteerism. So it's all equated across the board, where those born before 1964 don't have that separation. It's money first and then volunteerism, etc. So there's generational shifts in attitudes, like I said, towards giving. These are just some of the sociological reasons. Rapidly changing population and demographics, right? So income disparity and wealth gaps between people groups is leading to a loss of revenue, fundamental reshaping of the way we're thinking church. Church budgets are in decline. They're stagnant in decline over the past 5 years. They've dropped 19%. So from a sociological perspective, the survivability, if you will, of the church, and that was all prior to COVID, by the way. So with automation and AI scheduled, according to Oxford University, to take 12 to 22% job displacement by 2030, potential for the American government to take away tax-exempt status for the local church or for counties to tax your property. All of these are some practical reasons. So sociological, practical, but the biggest is theology, John. It's good stewardship. In the Word of God, I mean, I could wax eloquent on a number of passages, our erroneous division between the sacred and the secular, the place of missionaries and pastors in the pecking order as if that's above everyone else. But good theology, good stewardship. In the American church, it's management. Yep. Right? It's manage what God has given to us. It's report our the way we're spending money. It's accurately record receipts. Of course, that's well and good, but that's management. In the Bible, good stewardship is you gave me five, here's your five, and I made you five. Here, you gave me two, here's your two, I made you two. One guy sat on his asset, and that person is called the wicked, lazy servant, the wicked, lazy steward. So sitting on our assets, as the American church is currently, literally on scores, if not hundreds of billions of dollars of assets buried in the ground, not actively engaging the community. It's buildings that sit empty from Monday through Saturday, again, all prior to COVID. It's land that's sitting there undeveloped. Mm-hmm. It's a church, as I referenced in the last session, of 65 people with a $2.5 million endowment in the bank. Nobody's getting saved. The community's not being engaged. But by golly, they're proud of the fact that they have $2.5 million in the bank, right? To the tune of scores, if not hundreds of billions of dollars. Jobs are not being created. The economy's not being changed. Repurpose abandoned property, helping to reduce crime. All of these things is what the lost and disenfranchised pay attention to. In the 20th century, it was explanation of the gospel. In the 21st, it's demonstration. And I firmly believe, I'm sure Carrie and Mark, all of us would believe, that it's just economics. When the church unleashes the power of entrepreneurship and just economics, leveraging its assets, blessing the community to advance its mission, but at the same time, doing it in a smart economic way to generate some measure of sustainable ROI or income so that that ministry can be sustained long-term in a community. That's just smart, good economics. Of course, most of us as pastors in seminary, we didn't spend 1 hour of one class in one semester in one course in an entire degree track,
right,
talking about things, business and economics, right? So a lot of this is going to have to be learned and forced upon us. And of course, COVID advances this revolution by 7 to 10 years. So for sociological reasons, practical reasons in terms of sustainability, income, as well as strong theology. What is faith? It's not the absence of intentionality. Intentionality is the actual essence of faith, that we work in partnership with God. What did Christ do in the temple? It wasn't he was about people making money in the temple. It was unjust economics. And so helping people to disrupt their erroneous thinking about theology, and which is great. Mark's done an entire dissertation, I imagine, on this, on theology and economics, that interplay. We've got to get it, because in the church, this is where people are going to push back. They're going to push back on two things. Number one, from a theological perspective, they've only thought about it at a surface level. We'll have to get deeper with them. And secondly, they're going to push back from erroneous understanding about tax laws in America. We'll lose our tax exempt status. And that's not true. And we perhaps can discuss that. But I have found that's the two pushback, but theology, sociology, and practice in terms of sustainability are reasons we need to think differently.
We want to, I want to thank you all for your time. You all are just so immensely impressive in your work, and I'm excited to now be friends of yours. And I want to thank everybody.
Thank you for listening to this excerpt of the session, Why the Church Should Care About Entrepreneurship, from Neighborhood Economics, Healing Our Communities. The session was moderated by John Brothers and featured Mark DeMoz, Carrie Sims, and Mark Sampson. The full session of Why the Church Should Care About Entrepreneurship is available for purchase along with the rest of the Neighborhood Economics Conference at community.faithfinance.net. For more information about Faith and Finance, be sure to follow us on Twitter at FaithFinanceNet or visit our website at faithfinance.net. Next up, music by David Benjamin Blower. David was our musical guest artist for Neighborhood Economics. You can find more of his music at davidbenjaminblower.com. I hope you enjoy, and again, thank you for listening.
Oh, scaffold is hope. Oh, climbing thoughts without banisters. If there is any road into the days beyond the calendars of woe, is by a thread a circus rope on which he gazes with disbelief. Through so much woe, so many ghosts whose faces marked with heart and grief. Streets and towns, hold on to your ground and dig your wells together. You streets and towns, hold each other's shoulders, govern yourselves together. Futures crashing like waves against the break. Suits are all stashing their golden hidden places. Yes, the future's benign, you're mistaken, my friend. Oh, angel of time, with frozen eyes, looking back on catastrophes. All stacking up and piling high, and yet I see you, yes, I see. You'd like to heal and make it right, but your wings are spread out wide, and some ill wind carries ye away off to some future there behind. Streets and towns, hold on to your ground and dig your wells together. You streets and towns, hold each other's shoulders, govern yourselves together. Futures crashing like waves against the breakers. Suits are all stashing their golden hidden places. You've kissed futures benign, you're mistaken, my friend. Futures crashing like waves against the breakers. Suits are all stashing their golden hidden places. You've kissed futures benign, you're mistaken, my friend. Futures crashing like waves against the breakers. The suits are all stashing their golden hidden places. If you've guessed the future's benign, you're mistaken, my friend.